Good afternoon, everyone. It's 1 o'clock and time once again for another edition of Memories and Music on CIGM-FM, brought to you by Inco Metals Company Limited. I'm Doug McLaughlin. To introduce you to today's guest, here's Gary Peck.
This week, my guest will be Bud Germa, and we'll be talking about what it was like to grow up in the community of O'Donnell, Bud Germa's work with Inco, and of course, his involvement in politics. Welcome to the interview portion of Memories and Music. Our guest today is Bud Germa, and Bud, welcome to the program.
Pleased to be here.
Bud, prior to going on the air, I asked what your actual name is, and I believe you said it's Melville Carlisle?
That's correct,
Germa.
Yeah.
Genealogy is an interest of mine, and before we get into the other topics, which are going to be interesting enough in themselves, of O'Donnell and politics, etc., could you tell us a little bit about your family, grandparents on either side, for example, and just trace them down to the present?
Well, I never met either of my grandfathers.
Mm-hmm.
On my mother's side, my grandfather was apparently killed in one of the mines in Coppercliff. I think it was for probably Spanish American or North American Copper Company. It was prior to Inco taking over. And he was working in one of
Was it in Coppercliff itself?
In Coppercliff, up at the end of Cliff Street. There's a glory hole still there, evident.
Could be the Canadian Copper Company then.
Probably Canadian Copper Company, mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the old glory holes up at the end of Cliff Street near Lake Claribel. And apparently he was killed there around the turn of the century when my mother, who is presently over 80, mm-hmm. was a very young girl. I think she was 2 or 3 years old when her father got killed. Consequently, I'm sure she doesn't remember her father very well, mm-hmm. and of course I have never met that grandfather.
What was his last name, by the way?
Antila was his name. He was an immigrant from Finland,
mm-hmm.
and it would appear that he died at a very young age. He came here and got a job in the mine and
mm-hmm.
and got himself killed quite quickly,
mm-hmm.
and left my mother pretty well orphaned, I guess.
Right.
With a couple of other kids as well,
mm-hmm.
my uncles, of course.
Mm-hmm.
On my father's side, Joe Germa, he ran a livery stable in Coppercliff. He had probably 100 horses, I understand. This, of course, was before the days of motor cars.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to rent these horses out to the mining companies and run a livery service and taxi service with the horses. And he used to bring these horses in from Saskatchewan, I understand. And he had a ranch in Saskatchewan where he would collect these wild horses, I guess, and he would freight them down here and break them and put them into service in the livery business in Coppercliff and Sudbury. You must remember that Coppercliff preceded Sudbury in those days.
It's quite a history for both, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And he disappeared on one of his trips to Saskatchewan to pick up more horses. He disappeared under mysterious circumstances, and his cause of death or his reason for death or the body has never been, none of these riddles have been answered. Even
it's never been located, the body.
Never, the body was never located. How he died, why he died, or when he died, we have never been able to decide. So on that side of the family, I don't know my background any further
no.
than that.
But you were commenting that the Saskatchewan connection may help to account for your name, for example.
I think the name, there are two towns in Saskatchewan, Melville and Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that one of my names is attached probably to these town sites in Saskatchewan, probably where this horse ranch was.
Mm-hmm.
I've never checked it out definitely, but it leads me to believe that that is where my name came from.
Mm-hmm. Now, your father's name? Father and mother?
Peter Alford was my father.
Peter Alford Germa.
Yeah, but he went by the name of Bunny. No one would know his official name any more than people would know my official
mm-hmm.
name. Bunny was his name, and he was quite widely known in the area, having grown up here, and he worked in the livery barn when he was a kid and worked at Inco since age 12
mm-hmm.
Until he retired. And my mother, of course, was born in Coppercliff.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents, or her stepfather, remembering that her father was killed in the mine,
right.
her stepfather ran a baker shop in Coppercliff. So she was quite well known
mm-hmm.
in the community connected with the baker shop, because she did work as a young girl in the bake shop. She told me a lot of stories about that, selling bread and
mm-hmm.
buns to the community. And apparently they had quite a good business running there.
Mm-hmm. Was that located on the main street in Coppercliff?
No, it was located on Popper Street,
and
the right across from the Finnish Church.
Mm-hmm.
You must remember her name was Antila,
mm-hmm.
and that was right the center of the Finnish community in those days. There was, I remember, there was quite a large Finnish community, quite a tight-knit community, even when I was a kid, when I used to hang around the baker shop, servicing not only the Finnish community. They had probably 15 or 20 trucks on the road delivering bread and those Finnish specialties, which we've lost a taste for recently.
Right. So that was quite an enterprise there then.
It was, yeah.
But you mentioned your father worked for Inco. Did he work at the smelter? Did he work in the mine?
Well, he had been at the smelter as a very young boy, age 12, on the furnaces. And then when they opened up O'Donnell in 1916, my dad got sent to O'Donnell. Now, how this was arranged or why, I don't know. I've never explored that. But anyway, I do know that he went to O'Donnell in 1916 when the plant, when the roast beds opened up.
Now, did the family go as well?
Yes, we must have went quite early because I was born in O'Donnell in 1920. Mm-hmm. And my older sisters were born in O'Donnell, so that the whole family must have went right from day one to O'Donnell.
Right from 1916.
Right from 1916 when the roast beds were opened, yes.
All right, I think what we'll do now, Bud, is we'll take a break, turn the program over to Doug McLaughlin. When we return, we'll talk about the community of O'Donnell. First, we'll hear from Doug McLaughlin. Today on Memories and Music, our guest is Bud Germa. And Bud, I understand that you started work at really a fairly early age. You were in your mid-teens, I believe?
Yeah, well, I was at Inco in December 1935, when I was 15 years of age at that time. And prior to going to Inco, I had been a delivery boy in downtown Coppercliff, working for Rasico and Dara, that was a grocery store, a dry goods store, and general merchandising store in Coppercliff.
Where would that store be today? What would
be right on Serpentine Street, I guess, right about where the liquor store is now. It was quite a big store. Mm-hmm. And the delivery boy did a lot of things besides driving the horse and delivering. We had to haul the potatoes up, the 100-pound bags of potatoes up from the basement, and I had to fill the sugar bins, haul up 100 pounds of white sugar, another 100 pounds of brown sugar, dump it in the bins, bring up the canned goods, stock the shelves for the girls, and then look after my horse and get him harnessed and get him on the road at 8 o'clock in the morning.
To deliver.
To deliver, yes. And they took orders. There was a lot of shopping done by telephone in those days. The girls would take the orders, fill the boxes, and it was up to me to deliver them to the houses. They took the last order at 6 o'clock in the evening, of course. Mm-hmm. Now, that meant that the delivery boy was still out on the street at 7 o'clock.
Those days are long gone, aren't they?
Except Saturday night, we used to stay open till 10, and we took orders right till 10 o'clock. And, of course, the delivery boy was still on the street at 11 o'clock Saturday night with the tired old horse.
It's a busy day.
A busy day, and then you'd have to get up Sunday morning to feed your horse because your horse had to eat 7 days a week, and it was the delivery boy's job to look after his horse, whether he was working or not.
Did you have that job for about a year?
No, not very long. Just the fall, from the summer to the fall of 1935. Mm-hmm. Probably 6 months at the most. That paid $25 a month, by the way.
$25 a month.
Yes.
I was curious. Most youngsters that age are in school.
Yes.
Why weren't you?
Well, I had been going to a high school in Sudbury. There was no high school in Coppercliff at the time. Mm-hmm. I had been going to school by streetcar, which was quite an expensive proposition. And it was 5 cents each way, by the way, and it was just very difficult to raise this money or to collect it from my mother. And once in a while, I would run behind the streetcar, because when I didn't have the 5 cents to get on, I'd run behind it. Hanging on, it would help to pull me. It was quite easy. It's quite easy to run fast when something's pulling you. But one very cold morning, I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore, and I defied my mother and said, I'm quitting school and getting a job. And that's how I got into delivery boy job, is for the sake of 5 cents, I quit school.
That's quite a story. Now, were there many who would do the same thing in terms of running after it? Was that a fairly common occurrence amongst youngsters?
There was a crew of us, not a big crew.
No, it couldn't
be. And we didn't do it steadily.
No.
It's just whoever happened to be broke at the time.
10 cents was a lot of money during the
Depression. Well, we used to waste our money quite well, too. We'd shoot pool with our, you know, if we'd get our weekly streetcar fare. Mm. our 50 cents,
half it spent the first
we would blow it on pool downtown Sudbury.
Your mother probably wasn't too too appreciative of that.
No, well, she wasn't aware of that, you know. And so to some degree, it was our own fault. Mm-hmm. We can't blame our parents, totally.
No.
But I recall shooting pool and losing my 5 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, I didn't mind running home at those, you know, at that time when I was the guilty party.
Mm-hmm. Now, you started working with INCO in 1935.
1935, yes. As I say, I was a delivery boy driving the horse, and this was a better job.
Mm-hmm.
It paid 27 cents an hour, which was quite a raise in pay from what I had been earning at the grocery store.
That's 27 cents an hour in 1935. An 8-hour day?
It was a 45-hour week.
45-hour week.
Yes.
Now, what line of work were you doing as a 15-year-old?
I was in the messenger service, working out of the general office in Coppercliff, and my job entailed going into the smelter to all of the different shops and shacks, they used to call them, where people would, I would collect their time slips.
Mm-hmm.
And the tonnage reports and technical reports, and deliver orders from the general supervisors to the various foremen, visit all the offices in the smelter and bring back their reports. And then I would do the bank run, going downtown, depositing INCO's cash in the bank, downtown Coppercliff, visit the post office, pick up INCO's mail, bring it back to the office, sort the mail, deliver the mail. And then in the late afternoon, it was also my job to get the mail ready and into a bag and bring it down to the post office to get INCO's outgoing mail going into the stream. And there was the downtown hospital. There was always reports going back and forth. The president's house was a regular call, too. He was always sending reports from his house. Sometimes he didn't appear on the scene, so we'd have to go to his house and pick up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And generally do that.
So you were making the rounds in a sense.
Making the rounds of communication for INCO.
Right.
Delivering reports.
Now, you did that just for a short time?
Probably for a year. And then there was an opening in the printing department, and I learned quite a bit about running offset presses, setting type, cutting paper, inking machines, and I did that for a little while. It didn't seem to satisfy me. I think I wasn't cut out for office work.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was encouraged by the office manager to enroll in Sudbury Business College, which I did. And I did learn to run a typewriter in about my first 3 weeks taking this course in the evening. And the office manager said that there was a job for me in the office if I would learn this secretarial skills. Well, it didn't take me very long to realize that I wasn't cut out for this kind of business, even though I could run that
typewriter. You'd rather be elsewhere.
I would rather be out where there's a little more fresh air.
Right.
And it was at that time that I saw an opening for an apprentice in the electrical department, and of course I was on a first-name basis with the electrical super, Gillespie. And I approached him and told him what a good fellow I would be as an apprentice, and he agreed. And that's how I got out of this white-collar job into the blue-collar field of electrical apprentice.
So that basically is your skill, is it not, electrical work?
Yes, I spent my life in the electrical field as an armature winder.
All right, where would that be located, Bud, exactly?
The winding shop is located in the smelter, and it entailed quite a bit of traveling to the various plants as well, even though we were headquartered in the smelter.
Mm-hmm.
We would have to go to the powerhouses because the generators in the powerhouses were too big to move into the shop. So when rewinding was required, say on a big hoist or a big generator, well, we would move the shop to the site rather than bringing the job into the shop.
What kinds of jobs would you be involved with over the years, you know, in terms of electrical work?
Always on rewinds.
Rewinding.
Yes. And INCO has some major machinery. Like, as I said, sometimes they were so big you couldn't move them. You would have to do it on site. You would have to do a lot of improvising. It's quite a heavy job. It's a physical job. There's nothing automatic about it. It's all hand labor. You work pretty steadily.
You have to
be quite dexterous with your hands.
Right.
In order to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Now, you worked with Inco from 1935 until, what, 1980?
Until 1980, yeah.
And then, what, retired? And
yes.
You've retired from Inco in 1980.
Yes.
All right, we're going to break at this point, and when we return, I want to talk about the O'Donnell story, because I think
sure.
there's quite a bit of interest in that community. But first, we'll hear from Doug McLaughlin, our music host. Today on Memories and Music, our guest is Bud Germa. And Bud, you indicated at the onset of the program that you were born in the community of O'Donnell back in 1920, was it not? August 1920?
That's correct.
Born
yeah.
in O'Donnell?
Yeah.
I expect most of our listening audience know where O'Donnell was, but there probably are some who don't. Could you describe the location?
I think the easiest way to find O'Donnell would be to go through Creighton Mine and keep going west about 4 miles, just shortly before you come to the Vermilion River on the old railroad bed, is where the O'Donnell town site was. Pretty difficult to find it right now because it's overgrown.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be some old foundations there, and that would be all you would find right now.
Right. So O'Donnell was largely west, but also a little north of Creighton, could
correct.
We say? A little
yeah.
northwest.
It followed the Algoma Eastern Railway
mm-hmm.
To Espanola.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be our communication, was that old railway line.
And O'Donnell yeah. was a stopping point.
Yes, it was.
Now.
Well, a flag stop.
Right. Your father was at O'Donnell in the line of work, working for Inco.
That's
it was
right.
a roast bed out there. They moved the roast bed from Coppercliff.
That's right.
I think out to O'Donnell, probably for a number of reasons. What was it like growing up in O'Donnell? You were there for, what,
well,
11
the,
years?
The reason the roast bed was moved from Coppercliff was on account of the smoke that
yeah.
it generated. So, consequently, we in the town of O'Donnell
gained what Coppercliff had lost.
Yes, we gained the smoke, of course. There was only very few of us.
Mm-hmm.
And the smoke, of course, didn't torment several thousand people as it did in Coppercliff. It only tormented a couple of hundred of us, I guess.
Yeah, would there be that many out there? Would that be the size, do you
I'd
think?
Say there'd be probably 25 houses and
mm-hmm.
Maybe 150 people.
Mm-hmm.
It fluctuated, I think, depending on
time of year, perhaps?
How Inco was pushing for,
sure.
for product. There was a lot of people on piecework, and Inco could increase their workforce very rapidly and without much inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
The boys piling the wood, for instance, were all piecework guys, so
mm-hmm.
you could hire 50 of them for a week or two if you needed more wood piled, and then lay them off at the end of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
There was not too many guys on permanent payroll.
No.
My dad was one of the lucky ones on permanent payroll.
Mm-hmm. Now, about 25 homes?
I think there would be about that.
Was there a school?
There was a public school, yes. Just a one-room. It was your typical one-room
One-room
schoolhouse
that they often talk about.
With a Quebec here in the middle of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
One school teacher.
Grades 1 to 8.
1 to 8. I think it was divided each row. There must have been 8 rows, I
mm-hmm.
guess. And grade 1 and grade
sure.
2 in different rows, yes.
Now, did you attend that school?
Yes, I attended that school till age 10, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember it very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christmas concerts we often associate with the one-room schools, don't we?
Yes.
Did you have your share of those, I imagine,
That was one of the big events of the year, mm-hmm. was the Christmas concert, and all the kids were very enthusiastic, including myself, to participate, to be
mm-hmm.
an angel or whatever was required.
Whatever was asked
yeah,
of you.
Yeah, I forget what I did, but I knew I was on the stage.
So sure.
Probably my first stage performance
right.
was
there.
This one-room school.
But any other public buildings there? Did Inco have any buildings to speak of?
Yes, there was the boarding house for single men. It was quite a large wooden frame building.
Mm-hmm.
How many rooms there would be in it, I don't know. Probably 15 or 20. Where single men would stay, and there was the cook and the operator was a man named Dunsmore. I recall him very well. He used to chew snuff like crazy. And
the cook and operator.
But he was a good cook, and he had a team of horses. He not only ran the boarding house and cooked the meals, he also did a lot of work with the horses, hauling groceries into the other families. And he also had the ice house. He cut ice and used to sell ice to people.
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite a busy guy. He
mm-hmm.
was one of the few guys in the town, or the only guy in the town, that didn't work for Inco.
The only private entrepreneur, in a
the
sense.
The only one, and he had her all going for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a hell of a good guy, too.
Good place to be, I suppose.
Yeah.
He was a jack of all trades and offered quite a bit.
He was a nice guy.
Was there a train station at O'Donnell or any kind of a small station?
There was a shack without a door on it. Without a door, so you can imagine. It was a wooden shack without a door, and people could get out of the snow or the rain. Something like a bus
shelter.
Like a bus shelter, yeah, only about twice as big. You could get 10 people standing in it.
That was for the Algoma Eastern.
The Algoma Eastern used to go through to Espanola in the morning and it would come back out in the evening. I guess it went a little current, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've traveled on it?
I believe I did. I don't recall traveling on that train, no.
No, but you may have.
I used to like seeing it coming in through town, though, every night.
That would be some excitement, I suppose, in the community for youngsters to watch that coming in. How many cars would it have? How many would it pull?
I don't know. It wasn't very big.
No. No, I shouldn't think so. Some of the family names associated with O'Donnell that you can recall. Sandy Butler, for example, is one individual.
Sandy Butler was my immediate neighbor. Mm-hmm. I remember him very well, and him, in fact, Sandy and I still communicate one with the other, mm-hmm. even to this day. Mm-hmm. Sandy remembers me when I was in the cradle, he tells me, because he was there long before I was.
And can you recall the names of some of the other people in the community?
The Brysons were there. Mm-hmm. Bob Bryson, Andy Bryson, right. Jimmy Bryson. I know those guys. They're still alive and well around Sudbury. Hildebrandts were there. Mm-hmm. He was the locomotive engineer, George Hildebrandt. Bray was there. He was one of the supervisors. Richardson was there. Danami was there. Collins were there. McNeils were there. Who else?
Well, if I gave Farrah. You all...
Farrah was there.
Farrah's.
He used to work on the track. He was the section man. And
I think if I gave you long enough, you'd have all 25 families.
Yeah, I think I That's could, yeah. Lalonde's, yeah. Lalonde's had a big family there. A lot of girls in that family. Mm-hmm. I think there was about 12 kids in that gang.
There weren't any churches, I shouldn't imagine, in the community.
I don't recall a church, no.
No.
There was no church. There was a community hall, which I suspect was used as a church.
Right.
I remember the community hall because it had a radio in it. The only radio in town was in the community hall. And the only person who could hear the radio was the person who had the earphones. So if you split the earphones in half, two people could hear this huge monstrous radio squawking. And I remember this big monster there with all the dials on it. And of course us kids very seldom got an earphone in our ear. Mm-hmm. But we used to hang around listening, watching the people, listening to a...
Watching their reaction.
Yeah. And we could hear the squawking in the earphones. So that's my first introduction to radio.
That's quite an interesting story. I was going to ask you, what did the youngsters do for entertainment? But I gather a couple of things. You watched the trains.
Watched the trains,
and waited for the earphone, if possible, for the radio. What else would you do in terms of sports? You made your own entertainment, I assume.
Well, I used to go fishing on the Vermilion River when I was quite young. It was only about a mile or so up the railway track. We'd walk the track and... I used to go fishing on the Vermilion. I remember doing a lot of whittling.
What would you catch on the Vermilion?
Pickerel. Yeah.
Fair amount of pickerel.
Yeah. And we'd whittle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody had a jackknife. And we'd make little airplanes with a windmill. And we'd make airplanes with four motors. And these windmills would go. We'd put them up on the roof of our sheds and they would swivel. And it would take us all summer, of course, to make a decent airplane.
Mm-hmm. Play baseball, play hockey?
We didn't have any organized...
Did you have
enough? No. We didn't have a rink. Yes, we did have a rink as such, yes. Eventually we got a rink with boards on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, though, we did skate in a swamp until we got the rink boards.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite popular during the winter.
Mm-hmm. Tobogganing popular?
Skiing, though. It's quite hilly country there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall skiing on a hill not far from our house, yes.
But you you left O'Donnell, the family left, 1930-31?
Yes.
Is that when O'Donnell was terminated, really?
O'Donnell closed in 1930, I believe, and we were a little late getting out of there. We were the last family. In fact, I recall spending a winter in that town, and we were the only family in town because we had a large family. There were six of us, six kids. And my dad had been transferred back to Coppercliff, and he couldn't find accommodation for us. So we were left there, my mother and all the kids. The water was shut off, the electricity was shut off, and we wintered there in total isolation.
That could have been a long winter, I expect.
No, it wasn't. It was beautiful. I didn't have to go to school.
Yes.
And I still remember I missed a year's school. At the time, I didn't know how dangerous that was.
No.
I found out later. But I enjoyed not having to go to school and just tearing around through the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Going for water down at the creek. There was a creek not far from there. I would chop a hole in the ice.
Any groceries would come in by train, I assume? Anything like that that you needed?
I don't recall the groceries coming by train.
No?
I recall us walking to Creighton Mine to get groceries. I think probably the Algoma Eastern had stopped by that time. I'm not sure.
But you recall walking into Creighton Mine?
Yes, it was about 4 miles, yeah.
Bringing them back on a wagon in the winter?
Yeah. Well, during the summer, we had a road by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we could get out by automobile in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no snowplow service during the winter. You were locked in there for 4 or 5 months.
Of the 25 families, how many automobiles would be in O'Donnell?
I think almost everybody had a car.
Everyone had a car.
But they couldn't use them in the winter. And I recall this fellow, George Dunsmore, who had the team of horses that ran the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He would organize parties of ladies and on a big sleigh with blankets and hay. And they'd have a big sleigh party going to Creighton Mine to do their groceries. And, of course, us kids, there was probably 15 or 20 kids with their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And we would run behind this sleigh and we'd have a heck of a good time. Having the sleigh ride party all the way to Creighton and all the way back. It would take the whole day to do this, but everybody had a great time.
But you made your own entertainment, and that was common for that time.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break now. When we return, we'll wrap the program up. First, we'll hear from Doug McLaughlin. Today on Memories and Music, our guest has been Bud Germa. Bud, we were just talking about the community of O'Donnell, and when you look back, you were there when you were quite young.
I was born there.
You were born there, and I think you left when you were, what, 11 or?
10 years or
10,
11 years.
10 years of age.
Yeah.
Do you have fond memories of that community? Do you look back?
I have no misgivings about being born there. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might think that I've been deprived, but I don't have that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think it gave me a great sense of responsibility.
That's what I was curious about. What kind of values would one acquire, or do you feel influenced you based on that experience? A sense of responsibility?
Yeah, because you had to pretty well look after yourself and supply your own entertainment, and nothing was handed to you, like in the school or on the street or for recreation. And we managed to survive and entertain ourselves as kids, probably pretty primitively, but we did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm pretty well balanced as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel it helps one in terms of having close relationships with people? You know, you're in a small community, you get to know everybody. That's often one of the advantages of
smaller
communities.
That's probably one of the benefits in that I knew everyone in the town, mm-hmm. and everyone in the town knew myself.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, you had to conform, because there was no anonymity as there is in a big city now.
Yeah.
You can get away with doing something stupid if you're 10 blocks from your own house,
mm-hmm.
in a little city like Sudbury.
Right.
In the town of O'Donnell, you couldn't, because everybody knew who you were.
A youngster had to avoid those pranks.
Yeah. If you broke a window, they knew it was Bud Germa that broke a window.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Sudbury, if you go 10 blocks away, you can break a window and nobody knows who that kid is.
Mm-hmm.
Or your dog would bite somebody. And mm-hmm.
Be throughout the community.
Yeah.
And
everybody knew whose dog was biting and whose kid was throwing rocks. So you learn to conform, because the repercussions were pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. But you were born in this area, in the Sudbury district. You've lived here all your life. What are some of the strengths of this area, if you're a salesman, and I think you have been on many occasions, when you sell the area, what do you say? What are the pluses of this community, this area?
Well, I think the distance from the populated areas,
mm-hmm.
such as Toronto and Southern Ontario, I think that's one of the pluses. I don't think a lot of people in Sudbury who have lived here all their life know the drawbacks mm-hmm. of the densely populated areas of Southern Ontario. Now, mm-hmm. I've lived in both areas,
mm-hmm.
and I find life more relaxed and much easier
mm-hmm.
in the northern part of the province than I do in a city like Toronto, which has 3 million people. It's a major world city,
mm-hmm.
and it has all the world's problems, whereas Sudbury is a small place, and we have not adopted the world's problems mm-hmm. yet the way the city of Toronto has.
There's quite a difference in pace, isn't there, as you were...
Quite a difference, yeah.
You know, the communities are going through my mind, the two you just mentioned now, Sudbury, Toronto, and then O'Donnell. When you look at the wide range there, But I agree with you, and certainly in this area, it's a very attractive area, isn't it?
I have no intention of leaving Northern Ontario or Sudbury. I'm quite satisfied being born here and having lived here, and I've traveled pretty well all over the world, and I can make a comparison.
Sure.
Having judgment, you know.
And have no regrets.
No regrets, no.
But I think we've done the impossible in the sense that initially when I decided I would like to interview you, politics was going to be the theme of the program, and we've managed to avoid that today. But I know that's a whole story in itself, and what I would like to do is come back and we'll have a program on your activity in politics.
Sure,
we'll do that at a later date.
Be glad to do that.
On behalf of our listening audience, thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us today on CIGM FM Stereo for Memories and Music, brought to you every Sunday at 1 o'clock by Inco Metals Company Limited.